Well, hello there, everyone. This is Patrick Gray with another edition of the Seriously Risky Business podcast. This is the podcast we do here at Risky Biz HQ, which is all about stuff like the old cyber government policy and whatnot. This podcast, of course, is hosted by Tom Uren. G'day, Tom.
G'day, Pat. How are you?
Good, good. And as usual, we'd like to thank our founding corporate sponsor for this work, Proofpoint, and also thank the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative for helping us do this. And for those who are not familiar, we publish a weekly newsletter called Seriously Risky Business that Tom writes. And after we sit down and do the final edit of the newsletter, Tom and I sit down and talk through, you know, the interesting stuff that he's included in his weekly thing. And Tom, we're going to talk about two things today. The first is that a professional association for military cyber professionals, which I hadn't heard of, but it's called the MCPA. It's calling on Congress to establish a seventh branch of the armed services, the US Cyber Force. So move over, Space Force, because Cyber Force could be coming. But look, we've only been talking about this for a very short time at Risky Biz HQ, but our initial gut reaction, yours and mine and pretty much all of us, is like, this seems like a pretty bad idea.
Yeah, so they sent a letter to Congress and it's just a single page and there's only really a single paragraph in it that says anything at all about the reasons why you'd want to do that. And it kind of makes a comparison to the Navy and it says, you know, we need to do stuff. Because you're fighting at sea and, you know, we need to invest heavily in manning, training, equipping. And I, like, sort of hidden in there, I think, is the reason why they think they want a force.
I mean, because
they get that training.
Like, they literally sort of say that, you know, cyberspace is like the ocean, right? So they're like, this is why we have a Navy, for example, that heavily invests in manning, training, and equipping to fight and win at sea. Cyberspace, being highly contested and increasingly so, is the only domain of conflict without an aligned service. How much longer will our citizenry endure this unnecessary risk?
Yep, and that's it.
And
I was like, I don't know. I thought about it a little bit. I didn't think it made much sense, but I went and looked at the leadership of the MCPA and it's, you know, Keith Alexander, Michael Hayden, a whole list of very, very senior people. So I thought, okay, well, I should probably think about this a bit more. And what I decided is that in all those other services, you've got some special thing that you don't do in civilian life. And mostly it's the fighting part. So, you know, you've got ships, you've got planes, you've got, you know, vehicles, and you drive those around or you fly them and you fight at the same time.
Mm.
Whereas I think in cyberspace or perhaps in information security, what the government does and what the private sector does is very, very, very similar. So the skills, I think, are mostly exactly the same. And now there's different boundaries. Of what's appropriate.
But hang on, unlike the transportation example that you were just citing, like moving vehicles around while fighting, you don't tend to be operating a computer while firing a gun at the same time. You know what I mean?
No,
like
that's
It's a little bit of a different vibe there.
Yeah, and I think the difference between an offensive cyber operation where you try and disrupt or destroy something and a pen test is really the scope.
Yeah,
and the procedures, like the procedures around it, you know, who's authorized it? Is it the client or is it the target? It's kind of the difference.
Yeah, is it a client or did your government authorize you to hit the target, right?
That's right.
Because the target doesn't authorize you, Tom.
No.
Sounded a bit off then, but anyway.
No, we knew what you meant. Exactly. And I think in a way that is sort of a reflection of why they are asking for a service, because people leave straight from government jobs directly into the private sector, essentially doing exactly what they were doing before, and at least in the past, being happier because there was less bureaucracy around it.
Mm.
And I also think that the field is an all-encompassing one in that, you know, every organization needs to have some of that expertise and it needs to have some ability to do, you know, either defensive and sometimes partake in offensive type operations. And so in an organization, when you know, you have to cut the cake a certain way. And so you gain or lose different things. And so I think by pulling everyone into a separate cyber force, you'd lose that interaction with each of the separate services.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually pretty important because cyber is just in everything.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I kept thinking of is, you know, the United States still has Marines, right? So the Navy has infantry. So yeah. Do you really want to break, you know, if you start breaking everything out into a different branch, what, then you're going to rely on cross-branch cooperation? Like, that just doesn't seem to make so much sense. And I think you're on really solid ground, I think, in your analysis here when you wrote that in some ways Cyber Command reminds us of U.S. Transportation Command. Logistics is vitally important. All services rely on it when it comes to getting what they need to fight, but it isn't its own service. And of course, US Transcom doesn't have the cyber's sizzle, but try fighting a war without it, right? And I think that's right. What you keep coming back to is that, you know, we kind of need cyber everywhere all the time, right? And integrated, every single branch should kind of have it.
Yeah, and I mean, that also creates problems, to be fair, in that you've got people moving around in different postings where maybe the requirements of the cyber operation don't dictate their career. It's kind of a compromise between Navy or Air Force and what cyber needs. But I think it's not clear to me that the cyber domain is so important that you need to focus on the offensive part so much. I actually think defensive operations, you know, getting defense right is the first thing you should do. And that needs people in each service that are really top notch at it.
Moving on, and look, speaking of Cyber Command, because we did mention them just a moment ago, one little item that you included actually got you and me into an interesting discussion, right? Which is that US Cybercom confirmed that it actually helped the Albanian government out last year when the Albanian government was being just smashed with like crypto and wiper attacks that were coming from the Iranian government. So US Cybercom sent a Hunt Forward team over there to help Albania try to recover. Now, I love these Hunt Forward things because I think they're a win-win for everybody involved. Yep. I think the people who are accepting the assistance get access to some expertise that they otherwise wouldn't. And I think for the Americans, it's useful because they get insight into how one of their adversaries is targeting one of their allies, right? So I think all around win-win-win-win-win-win-win. We've also seen Australia dispatch capabilities to the Pacific to help Pacific nations when they've been struggling with ransomware attacks and things like that. I think in that case, that had more to do with diplomacy than collecting interesting indicators of compromise and whatnot.
But it was about recovering from an emergency, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So it was diplomatic in the sense that it's a good idea. And
but I think I guess what I'm getting at is the stuff in the Pacific isn't, as far as I know, it's not ASD. I think it might be DFAT. So I think it's more of a diplomacy thing than an intelligence thing. Whereas the Hunt Forward, I think for the Americans, there is some sort of intelligence benefit there, right? Yep. So that's kind of the hair that I'm splitting there. Now, what was interesting, the thing that came up that we were discussing is it's a very American name, right? Hunt Forward.
Yes.
And it's kind of scary. So if Australia were to try to launch something like this in APAC, you know, to help countries that are frenemies. I mean, you know, Indonesia is sort of an ally of Australia. Like, we have a good relationship these days, but they're suspicious of us as well. And if we said, hey, would you like us to send a Hunt Forward team? They would probably tell us to f*** right off, right? And this is the conversation. So how, you know, in certain cases, it makes sense. Hunt Forward, bald eagles, America, hell yeah, right? That makes sense.
America.
Yeah. But in other cases, you know, you argued to me that we need to think about how we approach the language around this stuff. And I think you were making some good points there.
Yeah. So we actually had a similar discussion maybe a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I remember.
Where a French general had said, you know, had warned against Cyber Command. And
because they're getting access into all of your systems and it's the Americans. Sacre bleu.
And it's pretty clear that Cyber Command has to spend time and effort convincing potential partners that it's a good thing. Look, we're not going to spy on you. It doesn't make any sense at all. We get benefit, like, from it, as, you know, basically what you said earlier.
Well, just to interrupt your flow a little bit there, the comms from Cyber Command have actually been pretty good on this, because if you click through to the statement about the Albania thing, they're very careful to insert phrases like, you know, we would help with systems where the Albanians asked us to help with those systems and invited us to do that. So we're not just running buck wild around their critical infrastructure sort of thing. So they're aware. It seems like they're aware of this aspect.
Yeah. And I think the countries I've been to in Australia's region, they're a lot more sensitive about perceptions. And I just think Hunt Forward is, in that environment, a terrible name to use, because every time you convince someone, you know, they take it to their boss and they would say, we want to do this Hunt Forward thing with the Australians. And they'd go, Hunt Forward? Are you crazy? Yeah. And so I think a different branding stops you from going off on the wrong foot, and I think would just make it easier. So that, I suppose, was the point I was trying to make there.
Now, we've got a lot of listeners in the United States and who would not really know much at all, nor be expected to know much at all about Australia's relationship with Indonesia, but it's a complicated one, right? They're a very close neighbour, you know, to our northwest, big population. Australia actually sent troops into East Timor when it declared independence from Indonesia, while Indonesia was still claiming it to be its sovereign territory. So for a while there, you know, Indonesia's position was that we had invaded their country. But the relationship has improved somewhat. And it's a tricky one for Indonesia too, because they got China to their north, right?
Yeah.
And Indonesia finds China quite scary. And they got Australia to the south, who, you know, there's that Indonesian cultural thing about, you know, the Australians being nekolim, you know, neo-colonialists and whatever.
Right.
But ultimately, I think when the chips are down, they're kind of much more aligned with us than they are with the Chinese, which just results in some really interesting dynamics like the ones we're talking about. And I think a good example of that is AUKUS, where publicly the Indonesians are saying, oh, this is terrible, this is an arms race, whatever. But privately they're saying, well, the last thing we want is a weak Australia and for the regional balance to be all out of whack because China's the only dominant player, right? So these are the sort of dynamics that you have to consider when you're talking about sending in a Hunt Forward team, right? To a country where a lot of the population are going to feel quite uncomfortable with the idea of Australian defence personnel getting their fingers on keyboards at some of their critical infra.
Yeah, and Indonesia's by far the biggest country in the region, but I think that's a similar dynamic plays out in many other countries where it's kind of this push and pull between, I mean, obviously it's not just Australia, but between China and Australia, and trying to sort of strike that balance where, I think we'd like to be a reliable partner when it comes to cybersecurity for countries in the region, just because, well, I mean, my view would be that the less infiltration of networks by, well, let's say China, the better.
Instead of just saying regional adversaries, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
No, that makes sense. But I guess, look, this was all going somewhere, right? Which is, you know, you've got the United States doing this with Hunt Forward and whatever. And then Australia, it looks like we're doing this through foreign affairs. Now, I think just based on just this conversation alone, it would seem like deploying these sorts of capabilities through the government, you know, department that's responsible for diplomacy, I think here in this region is going to work better, right? And I think even for the United States, if they had have decided to do this through the State Department, not Cybercom, they might be getting some different results. So, I mean, there's just a big difference in the approach, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And of course, our foreign affairs here aren't calling it Hunt Forward. I guess they'd be calling it emergency assistance or something like that, right?
Yeah. I think there's no chance in hell that it would be called Hunt Forward. I'd like, you know, emergency assistant, partnership, peace operations, I think.
Partnership cyber peace operations. I love it. Right. Yeah. Kumbaya.
I seriously think there's a, you know, some time going to be spent somewhere high up. Someone is going to approve the actual name, and I'm looking forward to hearing what it is.
Mate, they will come up with something as dull and uncontroversial as humanly possible. It will be impressive how boring it is. But
yeah.
I just want to get your opinion on this. Do you think this sort of activity belongs coming out of, you know, military agencies like Cybercom, or diplomatic arms of governments like State Department?
Well,
or do you think it can be both?
So I think it totally makes sense for DFAT to run that kind of exercise in the sense of reaching out to the foreign party, you know, setting
DFAT it up. Is the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, by the way, for those not au fait, but continue, Tom.
Yes, Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. And they would have the sort of personal relationships. They've got people in embassies. You know, it makes a lot of sense, right? They can be sensitive to local concerns. What I'm concerned about is where they get the expertise from. So probably what I'd like to see is some sort of collaboration between DFAT and something like the ACSC, where there's a sort of defense, I mean, defensive, not Department of Defense, defensive focus, and it's clear that you're getting the best expertise coupled with people who know how to talk the right talk and get people to agree.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Tom Uren, thank you for chatting with me about all of this today. I think this is like this is just an interesting discussion, I think, for some of the people in policy. I don't think we've arrived at any conclusions here, but, you know, this is just a bit of a discussion about different ways you can slice this problem when it comes to, you know, trying to help out partner nations while not scaring them, you know, trying to capture some intelligence value as well. You know, this is a relatively new phenomenon, and, you know, we think it's great, right? So let's all try to work together to make sure it happens properly. But Tom Uren, pleasure to chat to you, my friend, and we'll do it again soon.
Great. Thanks, Pat.